Hello and welcome back to Pack Mentality, and today I'm going to be talking about the program design hierarchy. Now, one of my goals for 2025 is to educate my team more on how I do program design, both in a one-on-one setting, a group class setting, and also for age groups. So, you know, young, old, whatever, or for specific goals. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to release one podcast a week for the next year, and we're going to start from the absolute basics of program design. And then as we progress throughout the year, it's going to get more and more advanced on the topics, and you'll get one of those per week. So hope you guys enjoy the ride. And I'm really excited to talk about this because this is what I would say is one of the things that I am the most educated on in terms of what my investment has been, and also something that I take great pride in, and something that I'm continually trying to improve. And also, it's my time now to pass on this knowledge to my team and to other people, so that way they can continue to change lives. And it's not going to help anyone if I hide this knowledge from anyone. So everything that you're about to listen to for the next year is all things that I've learned from either much higher level coaches than me, all these courses that I've taken on program design, all the education pieces that I've learned. I've invested well over, I don't even know how much money, I didn't even want to count, but a lot of money into my education when it comes to program design, both in seminars, courses, online courses, so that way I could better serve my community and my team and make sure I get everyone as fit as possible in the shortest amount of time possible. So we're going to be talking about the program design hierarchy. And what this is, it's the foundation of any kind of program design. Now, I didn't want to start off with my first episode to be something that would just yawn you. So I'm going to start off with something that is basic, but is still somewhat interesting. So we're going to be talking about today about adherence, exercise selection, reps, sets, rest, and tempo. Now, these are the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 main components of any kind of program design. It doesn't matter if you're designing training programs for endurance athletes or strength athletes, that this hierarchy is a principle in strength and conditioning, regardless of what discipline you're in. So this is a very broad topic, but also but narrows it down to something that's very specific when it comes to actually making progress. So you have to imagine a pyramid now. So a pyramid coming down, adherence is going to layer a foundation, or it's the foundation of your house. Now, adherence is just a fancy word for just, like I say it, actually doing the program. Okay, so if you have someone who wants to skip around on, you know, wants to skip around programs, or wants to change your workouts, or do one workout like this, or do one workout at this gym, and do this workout at this gym, and then, you know, hop on this person's workout, hop on, you know, my own workout, then it's never going to be productive, because you're just going to be constantly monkey braining around. Now, this is a very common problem. It's actually more common than you think, and I see this all the time, whereas people get this shiny object syndrome of like, oh, this is the next cool thing, I'm going to go do this. I see this all the time, especially with diets. Now, I'm not going to get into that, but when it comes to training programs, that you even see this with games athletes. It's like, oh, well, this coach is doing this, and this coach is producing winners, so I'm going to go over there, when really we don't have the full context on what is actually working and how they design training programs for the people who are already going along. Because let's be real, in CrossFit, you know, guess what? Everyone's doing squat cycles. Everyone's doing aerobic intervals. So 9 times out of 10, it actually comes down to what you're doing on the back end with your lifestyle. So it comes down to how's your rest, how's your nutrition, how's your mobility work, your recovery, sauna, whatever. All those things come into play. Now, when it comes to adherence, the most important thing that in a non-competitive realm is that you want the workouts to be fun. Okay, so this is why boot camps can work for a while, because it's something new. Because most people who go to boot camps will start with a traditional gym. They hate it. They're not seeing results. So they go do a boot camp so they can lose weight. Nothing wrong with that. And this is why CrossFit, I think, is just my humble opinion, that is so effective at adherence, because there's always something novel or always something to get better at. Now, at the same time, that can also be detrimental to some people from starting in the first place, because they see all these advanced things and they're like, well, either A, I don't want to do that, or B, I'm so far gone or so far away from that I didn't want to try in the first place. And then that really comes down to a whole nother topic, which I'll talk in another podcast about, asking the right questions and actually, you know, as a coach, managing expectations. But I'll do that. I'll cover that in a whole nother podcast that I have planned for program design. So workouts that are fun. Now, I used to think that this was stupid, but workouts that are fun and that get people excited and makes them want to come to the gym is the best workouts. Does it have to be the best designed workout in the world? No, because for the majority of people, especially with how things are going in the United States as of today, then people just need more movement. They need to get in the move. They need to get in more movement, and they need to create it more of a habit of just getting into the gym and enjoying exercise, rather than worrying about any kind of advanced strength and conditioning or program design styles or methodologies. So that's what we try and do with our group classes, is really try and dial in the workouts to where, you know, we're continually making progress, but we're also making things fun. We're making things novel to where you're not doing the same thing every day or even the same training cycle. We're constantly rotating things in and out. We're constantly looking at the data from the results of our clients and saying, like, how can we make this more fun? How can we make this more effective? And how can we make this more efficient? And those are some things that you always have to be asking yourself as a coach, is how can I, just in simple terms, just how can I make this better? And how can I make people enjoy this more? That's it. You know, if you can get that right, you know, you're going to change a lot of lives in a positive way. So I hope that covers adherence. Again, if you have any questions, I know that most of you listening to this know me personally, so just feel free to come talk to me. I'm always happy to chat. We're going to move into exercise selection now. So we have adherence. Now, adherence forms our base of the pyramid. Now, the next level up, or our second floor, is exercise selection. Now, this is extremely important because this really comes down to whoever you're working with or what the group goal is. Now, when it comes, exercise selection is king. And this is another reason why I think CrossFit's so effective, because they pretty much caused a underground movement that tore apart the foundations of the traditional fitness world, because I'm very lucky that I was a part of this back in 2007. And back then, all we did was traditional bodybuilding splits, like back and buys. We did, you know, quads or whatever, you know, buys and tries, whatever, chest day. And then you did cardio after, right? So a lot of you are aware of that. Now, CrossFit did a great job of bringing in new exercises and adding in a lot of muscle confusion. Now, there's back then it wasn't as good as now, because we have a much better job of progressing it. But we want to choose the highest impact exercises that are going to take us the furthest. Okay, so again, we want it to be effective, we want it to be efficient, and also we want it to be fun. We want it to be something that people want to keep doing. And then, so this is why, you know, CrossFit really did popularize Olympic weightlifting. It got people not afraid of deadlifts. Like, believe it or not, people still today are afraid of deadlifts, but back then it was even worse. Squats, same thing. People were terrified of squats. I mean, I can't tell you how many times when I first started CrossFit, because I started CrossFit in a traditional gym, and I was squatting below parallel, hence the standard, and you have no idea how many old dudes came up to me, because I, at the time, I was, you know, 19, 20. And they're like, bro, you're going to blow out your knees, man, if you keep squatting that low. And I was like, really? And then they're like, yeah. And anyway, I'm not going to get into that whole story, but we want to choose the highest impact exercise to get whoever we want, whoever we're working with, to that goal. And usually it's always the same things, right? We have to squat, we have to deadlift, we have to bench, we have to do some sort of a press. Now, it doesn't always have to be with a barbell. It depends on the person's comfortability or how comfortable they are with that exercise themselves. And there's always certain progressions that you can go through. But exercise selection is going to be the biggest. You have to choose high impact exercises, because the majority of people that you're going to work with as a coach, they're not going to have the time to do a ton of accessory work. So you have to choose things that will compound movements that will work many muscle groups all at once, and that are functional and that will actually transfer to real life situations outside. So that covers exercise selection. I don't want to go too into that because we have a lot of things to cover. We're going to go into reps. Now, reps are king. So once you have your high impact exercises that you've identified with whoever you're working with or as a group collectively, and again, I'll go into this into more detail on a whole nother podcast on how to actually do exercise selection and how to actually structure it towards either an individual or a group. But reps are extremely important, because once you have the exercise, now there's certain pairings of reps, repetitions that you do with certain exercises that will yield bigger impacts. Some of them will be more nervous system based, some of them will be more strength based, and some of them be more hypertrophy based. So when we're saying hypertrophy, we mean muscle growth specifically. Now, with reps, we're I'll quickly cover it, but if you're in like the single rep range, you're going for just max strength. You're not going to put on a ton of muscle. It's going to be mostly a nervous system adaptation. Okay, so there's both neurological adaptations when it comes to reps and both a organic adaptation. So we get into higher rep ranges. So we've established that a heavy single is more neurological. So think of a one rep max squat, a one rep max clean and jerk. So if you've ever seen, on that note, if you've ever seen someone fail a back squat, most people, when they fail a back squat, they actually look pretty good going down. I mean, unless they just put on or made a ridiculous jump, and then which case they're just stupid and you probably shouldn't work with them. I'm just joking, but you as a coach should manage that. But you see someone go down for a squat, when they fail a squat, they actually look pretty good going down. Usually they start to come up and then something happens that looks like they just shut down. Well, their nervous system shuts down because their nervous system isn't used to lifting that much weight for a single rep. So it'll shut down to literally protect itself. So they're protecting the body from injury. So the only way to break through that plateau is to do like, that's why we do percentages, 90%. Sometimes we'll go up to 97% for singles. We'll do EMOMs to break through, to really break that nervous system into like, oh, I can lift this. And also on the opposite side of the spectrum, we have higher reps. So we're talking like the 20 to 30 rep range. Now, this is strictly for muscle endurance, okay? You're not going to even put on size with this. It depends on the exercise or the tempo. The tempo's at the end, which I'll cover. But when at the higher rep range, you're training exclusively, plus especially 20 plus reps, you're training more muscle endurance. You might put on a little bit of muscle depending on how developed your muscle already is. However, that's more for like sport, like this, like CrossFit in general. It's good for overall health and just muscle endurance in general. The good thing about having muscle endurance and being on both ends of the spectrum is that when you do meet in the middle, so let's say you become neurologically more efficient and organically on the opposite side of the spectrum, you have good muscle endurance. When you meet in the middle, you'll be ready for that. And that's actually where the bread and butter comes in and where the best rep ranges are for getting both. So now we're going to talk about kind of like that the 3 to 5 rep range. Now, this is where a lot of the training is going to happen, especially with compound lifts. 3 to 5 rep ranges aren't going to happen with non-weighted lifts or like accessory lifts like bicep curls. Like 3 to 5 bicep curls are going to do nothing. Hence why we look at exercise selection first. We see what the exercise is, and then we select the reps. Because if I prescribed you as your coach a one rep max bicep curl, that is not a very good use of our time. It's not going to tell us much in terms of feedback on where your strength is at. And it's also not going to be good at building muscle or your neurological activity for your lifts. So again, we scrap that. However, a one rep max snatch and one rep max clean and jerk, deadlift, bench, a compound movement like that will help us establish what we actually are capable of and how we can actually break through that plateau. It also allows us to see what are the main imbalances. The great thing about maxing out is that it's really easy to identify where we need to work on. So for example, if your back squat's 400 pounds and you deadlift 400 pounds, well, we know your posterior chain is weak and we're gonna focus on your deadlift. Very simple, easy example. And this is why we have that level up board in the gym, is because it gives you a quick reference point. Now, don't get me wrong, it's not a perfect board. And we went through a lot of iterations to do it. I'm sure we'll redo it again just based on the data. But it gives you something, a template to work with, to be like, am I balanced? Where do I need to work on? It gives you a very quick reference point. And that's the whole point of us building that out. And then we use as a reference point for designing our next training protocol. So for example, I just gave you a good example for a one-on-one style. Now, if we did that in a group style, when we look at your data, when we do tests and retests, and you've seen that, and if you attended our classes, you know exactly what I'm talking about. When we do our test weeks, we look at that and we're like, okay, where are we most efficient? And then, or what is the main constraint? What have we not improved the most on, if at all? Or what is something that we thought we were doing well at, but we actually didn't quite break through that plateau? And that helps us build out the next training cycle. So that way, the group as a collective will be working together on the same thing. And then so we established like that 3 to 5 rep range is going to be your bread and butter for training, because especially with compound lifts, because that's going to put on muscle. Not so much in the 3 rep range, but when you get in the 5 rep range, you kind of get a good combination of both. That's why I like sets of 5. That's why the 5x5 is a classic. 5 sets of 5 at 80% is just a classic thing that you'll see a lot in any training protocol, because you kind of get the best of both worlds. You put on muscle and it'll help you neurologically to get stronger for a 1 rep max as well. And then we go into kind of like the 6 to 8 rep range. Now, this is really good for when you start hitting more hypertrophy. So you want to get stronger, but you also want to add some muscle. So that's where you do like the 6 to 8 rep range with either squats, deadlifts. You can do this bench. You can even do it with curls. You can do it with almost anything. That's more the hypertrophy range. And then you kind of get in the 8 to 12 rep range. And that is where the kind of the classic hypertrophy is. Now, it depends on time under tension, which we'll go over in tempo. So those are your rep ranges. Again, it's all very basic, but it's I just kind of want to give you an outline on this first initial podcast for program design. Again, if you have any questions, just talk to me directly. Real quick, I want to take a quick break and thank you all for listening because our 2024, we grew the podcast by over 60%. We gained a ton of followers on Spotify specifically. I still don't really look at the data a lot because I know that that it'll kind of psych me out if the numbers don't look good. So I would really appreciate it if you're listening to this and you've been listening for a while. Please share this with a friend, like it, follow it, whatever. It just takes one click of the thumb, and I'd really appreciate it because it might change the life of someone else. And also, when I see the numbers go up, it keeps me motivated to keep making this. So give me a little dose of motivation and send that out. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much for listening. We're gonna go into sets now. Okay, so sets, reps are king, so we're halfway through. So we went over adherence, exercise selection, reps, and then we're on sets. Sets is really important because not everyone can tolerate the same amount of volume. And this is the sets is what's gonna control volume for the entire training session, the entire week of the training, of total volume accumulated throughout the week, and also the volume accumulated throughout the entire training cycle. Now, we run our training cycles anywhere between 4 to 16 weeks. Our main training cycles we like to run are typically around 8 weeks. We typically see the best results around 8, depending on what we're working on. When it comes to sets, now, this one's tricky because everyone responds very differently. So we see that beginners actually need a lot more reps and a lot more sets. And we see that intermediates kind of need like, an intermediate amount. So when I'm talking about high reps, we're talking super beginners, their nervous system can't really handle heavy lifts yet. So we have to compensate that by adding in higher reps. Okay, I guess I'm kind of going backtracking to reps too, but that's okay. So sets of 20, that's great for beginners. Like 3 sets of 20 is great for beginners, especially if they come from zero strength training background or they're kind of elderly or they're a little bit older. This really helps them actually put on some muscle and gets them used to just doing it. Also, without very, since they're using less weight, that they don't need to worry as much about injury. Now, intermediate reps and sets would be, I guess, anywhere between like the 8 to 12 rep range, because that's where you have some strength and then we're trying to add a little bit of muscle. And then the advanced, and then anyone can really do the 3 to 5 rep range. It just has to be done with supervision and with proper coaching. And then 90% of people don't even need to max out, but I still like to do it, or at least do what I call a heavy single. So that's close to a 1 rep max, but just something heavy for the day to just see where you're at. And that's really helpful for me because then it's really a 1 rep max is the easiest way, like I said earlier, on how to identify constraints and what any imbalances there are. Now, sets, when you're doing higher reps, you want lower amount of sets. Okay, so if you're doing a set of 30, you probably shouldn't do 7 sets of that, depending on what you're training for. Now, if you're a CrossFit Games athlete or you're another athlete, then you're working on a weakness, then that might be different. But we're talking in the context of just overall fitness. And as you kind of progress down, as the reps get lower, the sets can actually increase depending on that. And the reps are going to vary between training sessions and training cycles. So, for example, lower amount of sets will trigger more of a neurological, or so low reps, low sets will trigger more of a neurological adaptation. And also, it's really good for deloading as well. And then in that, the rep range I like, or set range I really like, is anywhere between 5 to 7. I think that's where we get the biggest amount of gains without overdoing it. The problem is when you accumulate too many sets and too many volume, it's really hard to recover. And recovery is actually where you get fitter and that's where you get stronger. You don't get fitter or stronger by tearing down your muscles in the gym, contrary to popular belief. You get stronger in the recovery. And don't even get me about that. Again, I'm going to do a whole nother podcast on recovery. But the sets, when you're in those ranges, the 5 to 7 rep range, what we see is that three to four is just not enough typically, depending on how strong you are. The stronger you are, the less sets you actually need because you're already strong. But for the most part, for your average gym goer, we see that 5 to 7 typically works out the best because most people just don't go heavy enough on their earlier sets. And most people, regardless of what we tell them, are going to build anyways. So by adding in 1 to 2 extra sets, we're guaranteed to at least get 5 really good working sets. And that's usually what I go for. As a general rule of thumbs, I want to have 5 really tough working sets depending on how I feel. Now, if I don't feel that great, 3 is good, maybe even 2, depending if, you know, how I'm feeling with my recovery, how sore I am, and how I am neurologically. But if I feel fresh, I'll go all the way up to 7, maybe even 10 sets, but I'm not going to get into that. So those are your set ranges. Now, we're going to move into rest. Rest is extremely important because this is especially in a CrossFit context because we're working on so many different energy systems and so many different muscle groups are firing together along with compound movements that rest is really tough. Kind of like sets. Sets can be tough to mitigate too or to kind of navigate. But with rest, the shorter the rest, the more your training capacity. The longer the rest, you're more training power or strength. Okay, so remember that. So the shorter the rest, your training capacity. The longer the rest, you're training either neurologically to get stronger or your nervous system to get stronger or just overall strength. So I like to keep rest times typically for main strength lifts, 2 minutes. Now that's always been the gold standard. 3 minutes you can go up to, especially when you get stronger. Now I think that CrossFitters do a really terrible job of resting, especially when they're trying to get stronger. Now this is something I see a lot, especially with new people who are new to strength training, is that since that they can't lift that much, that they don't rest enough, and then they go right back into their next set because, you know, they have to, and rightfully so, because their nervous system can't lift as much weight. So they have, again, like I said earlier, with their reps and sets, is that you have to compensate that with higher reps and higher sets. So the thing is that if you don't train your body to rest, then when you do get stronger, you're going to automatically think that that's the training method that's going to get you to the next level. When really, by taking longer rest breaks, especially when you're trying to get stronger, is extremely essential because what you're doing is you're letting your nervous system fully recover. So your nervous system, depending on the lift and depending on what you're doing and the intensity of it and the percentage of your one rep max, is that you can recover within about 50%, 40 to 50% within about the first 30 to 45 seconds. At least that's what we've seen with science and by doing e-bombs and training with the CP system. Now, the problem is rookies like to rest like a minute. So they're not even fully recharged yet with their levels and their nervous system. And then they go right back into another set. So you can imagine like a battery here. So you treat your nervous system like a battery. And this is 100%. This is 0%. And then you recharge about up to, let's say, 60%, and then boom, we just knock it back down again. So we want to make sure that with our rest sets that we actually get all the way up to 100% or as close to it as possible. And then when we do our set, the recovery drops and then we just go up and down, okay? Almost like a heart rate. Now, when This is hard to talk about because everyone's going to respond differently to training. And this is why it's so important to have some sort of a custom training protocol in place and to have some sort of a coach watching the person training in person. That's why I'm not a huge fan of online program design, is because I don't know if your reps look like crap or even if you put up good numbers, and I don't know how long you rested. I don't know if you actually stuck to anything that I said to do. This is why I like training and coaching people in person, because I have full control over it and I can see it. And I can see, even the look on your face when you're doing a set tells me a lot about what I should be doing next or what I can design to break through a plateau, or it tells me what we need to do for recovery. There's so many like nonverbal feedback that I can get just by watching someone train. And as a coach, as you get better, you'll be able to see that. And then you'll be able to make adjustments to their training even on the fly. And that's something that Caitlin's gotten a lot better at. This is something that is really hard to coach as a coach, is to actually see just the body language and the look on their face when they're training and being like, oh, I know exactly what I'm going to do next, or I know exactly how to change this in the moment to where we're getting maximizing our time. And that's the biggest thing when it comes down to this entire program design hierarchy, or program design in general, is to make things so efficient that they get results so quickly that they stick with fitness for the rest of their life. That's the end game, okay? You want to get them to the point where they don't even have to think about it, that this is something that they're just going to do because they get such good results that even if they don't like fitness at first, that they're just going to stick with it because of the results that they're seeing. And, you know, obviously when you get that feedback loop of I'm getting better and in a shorter amount of time than I thought, then boom, it's a win-win situation for everybody. I kind of went off on a tangent there. So let's bring it back in. Let's go over, we were under rest. Now when we're training in like a conditioning or a CrossFit style of rest with like, let's say EMOMs or intervals, same rules apply, right? So the shorter the rest periods between intervals or between whatever it is we're doing in our conditioning piece, the more we're training capacity. And then the same thing, if we rest longer or a one-to-one ratio in our training capacity, then we're training more power, okay, or output. So I can actually generate more power, I can move faster, and it's more of like a sprint than it is a capacity workout. And this is another thing that CrossFitters get wrong is because they think they always need to be training capacity when really you need to be training all energy systems. And so when you're only training capacity, you're only training glycolytic or you're only training your aerobic system or combination of those two. Now, the problem is when you actually want to move in and you actually want to get faster, your nervous system, again, isn't ready for that. So the only way to get your nervous system more efficient at going faster and going harder, let's say on the echo bike or run or sprinting the burpees on the last like five reps, is to actually train that way. And the only way you can train that way is to have more rest between sets. So I like a 1-to-1 rest ratio when it comes to training power, a minimum, sometimes even a 2-to-1. So I'll tell you about one of the hardest workouts I did when I was actually training for regionals. It was 3 sets. It was a 250-meter row, 15 kettlebell swings with a 70-pound kettlebell, 25 burpees, 15 kettlebell swings, and then 250-meter row. And then the rest times in between was anywhere between 8 and 12 minutes, depending on which style you were doing. I think this one I did, I rested 8 minutes. And it took me about 3 minutes and 30 seconds to do roughly each set. I think my last set maybe might have been over. But when you think about it, that's a 2-to-1 rest to work ratio. And what I was doing was you're practicing your transitions. You're practicing on much harder muscle contractions. So any of you who've ever done even a local competition know that you actually go a lot harder when you actually are out there than you do in the gym when you're just training. And so that's exactly the stimulus that we're going for. And the only way you can simulate that is by having more rest in between your sets. So I hope that's helpful. Now let's go into my favorite one and the last one before we wrap things up is tempo. Now tempo comes back to more of a more strength, I guess, biased section of this podcast where you look at our exercise selection, there are certain tempos that apply to each exercise as well. So for example, you also have to know what either the client is training for or what the group collectively is training for. Now, if you're going for just pure strength, tempo, you kind of throw out the door because we're just going for raw strength. It doesn't really matter. But most people need to build muscle. And the majority amount of people are here to build muscle as well. They want both. They want to lose fat, gain muscle, and live a longer, healthier life. Now, in order to do that, tempo is the best way to build muscle because it's safer, because it'll strengthen the tendons and ligaments around joints. It's better for hypertrophy. And it's safer because you don't use as much weight. Now, let's quickly go over what tempo is. So tempo is how you control each repetition. So we've done tempo here at the gym and you've probably seen it, but a good example of this is like 3 seconds down, 1 second pause on the chest for a bench press, and you drive it up quickly. Now, what we're working on here is when we control the time under tension of each rep, we're actually building more muscle because we're lowering slower. Now, the lowering phase of any lift, so going down on any lift, is where you're actually going to get the most breakdown or micro tears in your muscles. And that's when you rebuild that, that's actually when you get stronger, okay? So when you're just kind of banging out reps fast, you're not really getting a lot out of it because you're just having fast muscle contractions. There's not a lot of time under tension. You're just saving your muscle endurance for other stuff. And so when you're controlling the weight down, what you're doing is you're training your body to hold weight and it is also you're making your muscles just work harder. That's a better way to say it. You're just making your muscles work harder under less load, and then you'll see much better progress in terms of hypertrophy than you will strength. Now, for raw strength, yes, you have to do heavy singles. You have to be doing things quickly and hard and fast and maximal load. So, but there's a time and a place for tempo. And usually we use more tempo on more pure strength building stuff. You can't really do tempo on Olympic lifts. It makes no sense. But we do like establishing tempo when it comes to any kind of accessory movement. So like a lat pull down, bicep curls, even push-ups, dumbbell bench press, incline bench press, even lunges, especially any kind of split squat is always great to have tempo. Because if you're just busting out reps, then you're not really getting the full benefit of doing the split squat in the first place. Even deadlifts. Deadlifts work great. And what this does also, it builds muscle endurance without having to do a lot of reps. So if you can simulate how much, so you would, if you would actually time how long it would take to do 20 reps quickly, let's say, let's just make it easy, like an air squat. So let's say you busted out 20 air squats as fast as you could. Now you establish that and you do a tempo of like, you time it and you see how long did it take to do on average the 20 reps. And then let's say we take that number and then we apply it. Now I want you to do, let's just call it 20 seconds because it's easy to remember, 20 seconds, a 20 second descent of just an air squat, it'd be a lot harder and the time under tension would be a lot harder. Now you wouldn't get the same kind of aerobic benefit from doing 20 air squats fast. However, you're going to get more out of the time under tension by doing it a lot slower and controlling the reps. So let's say it is 20 seconds, but let's say we break it up into a 5 second eccentric or a 5 second lowering phase. That is 4 reps. So you're getting the same time under tension in 4 reps and you are getting in 20. Which one would you rather do? I'd rather do 4 personally, even though the 4 might suck more. So what that allows you to do is actually get a little bit extra. You get more out of the exercise by having some sort of a tempo attached. Now, I really don't like prescribing tempo. Sorry, I really don't like prescribing exercises without tempo, because it also allows me to see what the person is capable of lifting under a certain time under tension. And the problem is the hardest thing is prescribing tempo in a class, because not everyone gets it, and it's not their fault because they're not advanced. This is a kind of advanced style. Tempo is something that only got popular, I guess, in like the last 15 years. And I know that seems like a long time, but when you think about how long strength and conditioning has been around, tempo has only really been applied even in the CrossFit realm for like maybe the last 10 to 12. And my coach had me do this, and I remember the first time doing it, I thought it was so stupid. But then when I started seeing, you know, muscle building, I was getting stronger and I didn't have to do as much weight. So it really cut down on warm-up time, which is great. I forgot that's a huge benefit of tempo, is you don't have to warm up as much. Because think of it, if you have to warm up for a 3 rep max deadlift, you're getting all this weight out, you know, that's a lot, that's a lot to do. But let's say you're doing a 3 rep max tempo deadlift with a 3 second descent and a 3 second ascent, you don't need nearly as much weight. And by the way, that really sucks. I did that. Oh my God, that was terrible. It was a 3 second ascent off the ground. So 1, 2, 3 at the top, and then 1, 2, 3, tap the ground, and then up again. I actually had to do that for 8 reps for 3 sets of 8. That was only 3 sets of 8, but 3 seconds down, 3 seconds up. Horrible. Never want to do that again. But when I did start busting out reps for speed, it felt a lot easier because my body was used to it. And then that's a huge advantage to CrossFitters, because usually what we see is they usually need to work on 3 things. It needs to be either their aerobic base sucks, their muscle endurance sucks, or their overall raw strength sucks. So when you do tempo, you kind of get both, okay? So you can get stronger and you can build muscle endurance at the same time. So again, we're being efficient here. And then the aerobic stuff we can get into later on another podcast. But that's the program design hierarchy. I hope that was helpful. Hope you found that interesting. And we'll catch you on the next one.